Okay, so we're on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, and we are up to Tana Rabbanan Al Shalosh HaRatzos. This we did yesterday. Let's just review this from yesterday. So again, this is about two thirds of the way down from the top of the page, or one third of the way up from the bottom of the page, and it's right after the teiku. Yesterday we had a teiku with regards to Rav Shimon Gamliel, what he meant by alat kufa. And now the Gemara quotes a brice that divides up Eretz Yisrael into three sections. So we have Yehuda, we have Evra Yarden, we have Galil, and al sholosh haratzos ma'arbim es hashana. In other words, all the various simonim that we spoke about that would necessitate ibur, for example, the tefuah is not ripened, the peiros are not ripened, they're going to apply to these three aratzel. So it could be that there's more rain in one of the three aratzel or in two out of the three, and therefore the fruits are growing, or they're ripening, or the grains are ripening. So we say the following: Yehuda v'yavagol shtayim en ma'abrin v'al achas mehen ein ma'abrin. If two out of the three of these territories are in a situation where it's not Aviv, it's not Peres HaIlon, the fruits haven't ripened, or the grains haven't ripened, then that's enough of a reason to justify Ibur HaShana. However, if only one of them is in that situation, one out of the three, then halach is ein ma'avrin. So one out of the three is not going to justify the Ibur Shana, but we need two out of the three. And here we had a discussion yesterday. I'm not going to repeat all the details because it's not so important for us today, but it would be very strange that if the issue of Ibur Shana in the case of the fruits and the grains that haven't ripened is an issue of bringing the Omer, that we might not be able to bring the Omer, well then everything should depend upon Yehuda, because the Omer, as we're going to learn, is brought from Yehuda. So for example, let's say that the grains are ripened in Yehuda, then who cares about the fact that the grains are not ripened neither in Golil nor in Evra Yadin? It doesn't matter, we can still bring the Omer. That's why Rashi rejects that opinion, that the reason for the Ibur Shana is because of the Omer. It's not because of the Omer. If it was because of the Omer, it would totally depend upon Yehuda and only Yehuda. Then the Braisa goes on to tell us that Bizman she Yehuda achas mehem hakol smechem, which means that we're very happy about delaying the month and delaying therefore the Omer, which is brought on the 16th of Nisan, by adding another month of Adar. That's a great thing. If in the case of Yehuda there is a problem of lo nisbash la tvua, which means that the grains in Yehuda have not yet ripened, that kol smechem, why? She'ena omer ba elam Yehuda. Because if all things are equal, we'll see later on what happens if we cannot bring the omer from Yehuda, but if things are in an ideal situation, we're going to bring the omer from Yehuda, because that's where Yerushalayim is, and that's where the Beis HaMikdash is, and that's where we want to bring the omer from. That's the entire territory of Shevet Yehuda. And in such a case, if Bezdin decides to be Ma'abra the Shon and add an extra Adar because the grains in Yehuda have not yet ripened, so then everyone's going to be happy because they're very eager to bring the Omer. Why are the people happy when we bring the Omer? Because the Omer is Matir Chodesh, so they're very eager to bring the Omer. So therefore, if the grains in Yehuda have not yet ripened, there's going to be a problem with bringing the Omer. They're going to be very happy if we can add another month to guarantee that by the time Tetzayim B'Nisan comes around, the grains in Yehuda have ripened, hence we can bring the Omer. Oh, so why are we going to be happy? Great question. That's what I was about to address. But I'm glad you asked the question, because you saved me the breath of having to ask the question. He says the following: Im nisbash la tvua b'Yehuda kol tzarka. This is a summary of Rashi. If it would be that the issue of lo nisbash la tvua is only in Golil and Evra Yardin, but in Yehuda we have no problem, so then Lo hayicholim lahavi es haomer miyehuda meacher sha'ad sha'as havas haomer kvar nisyavshu hatvuos shebe'eretz Yehuda. V'ein omer uyis l'minchas haomer. So he says the following, that paradoxically, in the case where the fruits, the grains, I should say grains here, right? Because we bring the omer from barley grains. So in the case where the grains in Yehuda have already reached their maturity, and there's no reason to add an extra month of Adar, if not for the problem that exists in in Goliel and Eivre Yarden, then the people are not happy. Why are they not happy? You would say, well, this is great. You know, in Yehuda we have all the fruits and all the grains that we need. You know, our storehouses are filled. But the answer is no. Because by adding an extra month, the grains that have already reached maturity at the beginning of that month or before that month are now going to get dried up. And they cannot use dried up tvua for the mitzvah of the Omer. That's because the Omer says caramel. In the pasuk it says caramel, and caramel means that it's soft. But if you delay by 1 month the bringing of the Omer, then all the grains in Yehuda that have already matured before that month will now dry up. And we won't be able to bring the Omer the way the Torah really wants us to bring the Omer. Again, as a fallback position, we'll have to bring the Omer from Goliel or Eifra Yarden, but that's not ideal. So it comes out the following. Why would they be sad if there was no issue of Lo Nisbashla Tvua B'Yehuda? Why would that make them sad? Because then the Tvua in Yehuda would dry up, and he Efshel Lahavias Minchas Omer B'Yehuda. Now, if you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maskel U'Bizman, you will see that Rashi adds another possibility. And he says that Bizman Shinisbashla Tvua B'Yehuda V'Ibru Ashonal Kashul Nisbashla Makomos Hoyu B'nei Yehuda Atzovim. It's the B'nei Yehuda that are sad. And why are they sad? Because they will still have to, their heter for Chodosh will have to be delayed for a month. In the other parts, you know, Goliel and Eivre Yarden, they're not sad because the fruits and the grains are not mature in any event. But in Yehuda, they're going to be sad because since the grains have reached maturity, you know, and you would want to market them and eat them, you can't do so because the Omer is being pushed off by 1 month. Hence, the Isur Chodesh is extended by a month. So that's Rashi's second shot. So let's just summarize the two interpretations as to why we would be happy if the grains have not yet reached maturity in Yehuda, and that's when they were Ma'abra the Shana. First answer is because if the grains have not yet reached maturity, then by adding a month, we'll be able to bring the Omer from Yehuda, and that's the way it should be, and that's going to bring Simcha. And the second interpretation is that if the Tvua has already reached its maturity, and then in Yehuda, and they're going to add another month, then the people of Yehuda are going to be sad in that case, because they're going to be holding on to fill, you know, their granaries are full storage, because already before that month, the Tvua already reached its maturity, and now they're going to have to delay the eating of that Tvua, or marketing that Tvua, for a full month. And that's not something that makes them happy.
Don't they take into account all the other people coming in that they're going to be buying and they're going to get from Yehuda?
What's the case? Are we talking about a case where the grains have already reached maturity in Yehuda?
But isn't it more convenient for others that don't live in Yehuda to get the grains from Yehuda?
Right, but what are they going to do with the grains from Yehuda if they now are Ma'abra the Shana and they've delayed the Omer by a full month? There's nothing they can do with those grains. So the people from Goliel and Eivre Yarden are going to descend upon Yehuda because that's where the grains are ripe, and they're going to look at the marketplace and they're going to fill up barrels and barrels of grains. And meanwhile, Bezin went ahead and they were Ma'abra the Shana. And guess what? You can't eat a single grain because it's all Chadash. So nobody's really too excited about that. Any Yehuda that are excited about that, because obviously they're not going to be able to market their products when it's a Chodesh. Not because Al Pidin you can't sell Chodesh. Chodesh is Mutabana. You're allowed to sell Chodesh. But who's going to buy Chodesh? You know, the law of supply and demand. Nobody's going to want to buy Chodesh. We're going to store it for another month. know, today, maybe nowadays, we have refrigeration, and you know, I know people who buy Cheerios, boxes and boxes of Cheerios during the winter, and it's all chadosh, and they store it up and they eat it after the winter. When they bring the Omer. Well, again, we don't bring the Omer today, but after the 16th of Nisan. So you'll ask me, but, you know, all those Cheerios are going to spoil. There's preservatives. So we have so many preservatives that you can hold on to Cheerios for 6 months.
So this is the argument that even if the other two, you intercalate for the other two regions, the problem is still
The Judeans are not happy because they're stuck with fully ripened grains that they've already harvested and they put in their granaries, and it's worthless. It's virtually worthless.
So it's just Judea alone a reason to extend the leap year?
No.
It has to be two.
But if Yehuda is one of the reasons why we're delaying, then there's a certain element of Simcha, Rashi says.
So the problem is that it's the other two without Yehuda. That's the problem.
That's going to be awesome. That's going to be sad. Tana Rabbanan Eima Avrim Es Hashanim Ela B'Yehuda. Where is the Beis Din qualified for Ibra Shana? So Rashi identifies Yehuda here as Yerushalayim, because the Beis Din HaGadol sat in Yerushalayim, and they, and only they, were authorized to be Ma'abra the Shana. That's what comes out according to Rashi. The Yad Ramah is not happy with Rashi, because he says the Mishnah should have said, Ein Ma'abra Nes HaShana Ela B'Yerushalayim. Why did the Mishnah, why did the Raisa say, Ela B'Yehuda? So he interprets it that you could be Ma'abra the Shana anywhere in Eretz Yehuda. And why is that? Because we need the Beis HaMikdash, but the Beis HaMikdash expands beyond the confines of Yerushalayim and encompasses all of Yehuda. In other words, the Shechina of the Beis HaMikdash somehow permeates throughout all of Yehuda, and as long as we can get Beis Din HaGadol anywhere in Yehuda to initiate this process of Ibra Shana, that's valid. That's the Yad Ramah. Rashi, on the other hand, seems to identify Beis Din HaGadol as the Beis Din HaGadol, with a capital Hey, Ha Beis Din HaGadol, the known Beis Din HaGadol. That's the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, but then you have to, in a sense, cross out the word Yehuda and substitute the word Yerushalayim. In Ibrua Begolil, Me'uberes. This is a B'dievet situation, and the Beis Din in Golil went ahead and was Ma'abra the Shana. Now, I'm not clear about the following. You notice that we have just, in the previous brisa, divided up Eretz Yisrael into how many sections?
Three.
And the third is Eivra Yarden. I don't know why Eivra Yarden isn't mentioned here. And the first answer I want to give is absolutely incorrect. And that's why I'm confused. The first answer I thought intuitively was that in Eivra Yarden it doesn't have the same sanctity of Eretz Yisrael as Gufa Shel Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael proper. Eretz Yisrael proper is divided into two Arotzos, that's Yehuda and Golil. Eivra Yarden has a lower level of Kedusha, which again expresses itself in different dinim as far as Trumas and Maisvus is concerned, and maybe that would not be enough even in a B'dievet fallback position for Ibra Shana, but that's not correct. How do I know this is not correct? Because of a sugya Masech Yevamos, which we're gonna mention over and over again. The Gemara tells us at the end of Masech Yevamos that Rabbi Akiva in Naharda, which is in Bavel, was Ma'abra the Shana. So we see that there's a possibility of Ibra Shana even in Chutz Laretz, if need be. Now, why was it need be? Because there were no Chachamim on the level of the status of Rabbi Akiva in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva was the kingpin, he was the head honcho, and he was in Narda in Bavel. And therefore, there was no possibility of being Ma'abra the Shana. The Ibra Shana has to take place and has to be instituted by the highest court in the land. And in this case, the highest court in the land fell short of the court of Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, Eivra Yarden really is not being excluded here, because if, let's say, for example, Rabbi Akiva would have been in Eivra Yarden, for sure he could be Ma'abra the Shana if need be, even though it's not on the same level as Yehud and Galil, but it's certainly on a higher level in Kedusha than Narda, with all due respect. In any event, The Braisa quotes the Tanakhama. This is before Hananya. And the Tanakhama is of the opinion that although Yehuda and the Bezna Gadol in Yehuda is our preference, but nevertheless, b'di'eved, there is a possibility of Ibra Shana outside of Yehuda, and as we pointed out based on the Gemara Yevamos, even in Chutz Laretz. But Hananya disagrees. Heid Hananya Ish Ono, that's where he came from. I think today there is a yeshiv called Ono, if not mis, Kiryat Ono, am I right? Where it's near Tel Aviv. Yeah, it's. I think a lot of rich people live there, right? Or well, I'm thinking of Savion. Maybe I'm thinking of Savion. Yes, I think next to Savion is Kiryat Ono. So Savion are the rich people and Kiryat Ono are the poor people. I don't know. Anyway, She'im Ebrua Begolil, Einam Uberes. According to Hananya's testimony, the halacha was established that Yehuda is an absolute critical, indispensable requirement. And therefore, outside of Yehuda, there's no valid Ibur. And therefore, even in Golil, which is part of Eretz Yisrael proper, the Ibur is invalid b'di'evet. The question is going to be, what about Rabbi Akiva? And we said that the Gemara in Yevamos establishes Rabbi Akiva was ma'abed Shana in Nardah. Certainly Nardah is on a high is not on the highest level. It certainly falls short of Golil. We're going to have to assume that Rabbi Akiva passes like the Tanakhama against Hananya. Oh, Rabbi Yehuda, Bered, Rabbi Shimon, passing my time. The Hananya Ish Ono. Why did Hananya Ish Ono conclude that the requirement of Yerushalayim is absolutely indispensable? On my Kra, the Pasuk says in Dvarim, L'shichno Sidrashena, Sidrashu Ubasa Shama. And the word L'shichno is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, to the place where the Shechina is Shora. And Tidrashena means any decision of Bezdin, which is called a drisha. Drisha means when there's an investigation and an assembly of the judges of Bezdin is called drisha shatadoresh lo ye el b'shichno shel makom. The place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the makom, is shochein eshchina, which means the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash and its kedusha and its shchina expands to include all of Yerushalayim. And according to Rashi, only Yerushalayim. According to Yad Ramah, all of Yehuda, which is also part of L'shichno Sidrashena. And that's an absolutely critical requirement. We can only be Doresh, in other words, all these decisions made by Bezdin, which in this case include Ibur Hashana, they have to be made in Yerushalayim, or alternatively in Yehuda, but not in Golil. And therefore, any Ibur Hashana that was effectuated in Golil is totally invalid. And here we asked the question yesterday, it was the last thing we discussed. The Gemara in Masechet Brachos comes to the same identical conclusion, but from a different pasuk. In Yeshayahu Novi it says, Ki mitzion teitzei sora. And the Gemara in Brachos assumes that the Torah here is the Torah of the Bezdin HaGadol and all their decisions, and that's mitzion. It has to come from Yerushalayim. So Rav Yaakov Emden, who lived about 5 centuries ago, maybe a little bit less, so he wants to know, is there any way of reconciling these two Gemaras? Agmar derives the conclusion that Ibur Shana requires Yerushalayim from the Pasuk L'shichno Sidrash. The Gemara in Brachos derives the same conclusion from Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sora. So he suggests that if we only had the Pasuk of Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sora, we would not be able to prove about the B'di'evit situation. We would only assume that L'chatchil, if all things are equal, then Bezdin HaGadol in Yerushalayim B'Tzion, that's where the Ibur Shana takes place. But as a fallback position, it could take place even outside of Tzion. And therefore we need the Pasuk of L'shichto Sidrashu, which is a more powerful pasuk. Why? Because L'shichno Sidrashu is B'loshon Tzivui. It's a mandate. Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sora is really more of a divine promise that the Torah will come from Tzion. And Baruch Hashem, we've seen this come to fruition today. Not just in the LC, of course, but I mean, it's unbelievable how much Torah is coming out of Yerushalayim. You know, you turn back the clock not long ago. I mean, there was Ki Mitzvas Teitzei Sora, but not Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sora. But we've built up here in Yerushalayim, it's unbelievable. But that's a divine promise. That doesn't tell me that if the Torah would come from somewhere other than Tzion, in this case the Torah meaning the decision of Ibrashana, that it would be invalid. For that I need a Tzivui. A Tzivui, says the Yaakov Emtim, is L'shichno Sidrashu, meaning be Doresh L'shichno in a Mokom Shel Shechina. Now here I want to mention the Ran. Here in the footnote in the Masifta, he quotes a Ran, and the Ran says that Shichno Shel Mokom is a very relative concept. There's no one single interpretation for the phrase Shichno Shel Mokom. It depends on what context you're talking about. For example, if you're dealing with Karbonos, then Shichno Sidrashu means the Beis HaMikdash itself. You can only bring a Karbon in the Beis HaMikdash. And this is after the historical period of what's called Beis HaBechira. Because before Beis HaBechira, means before the Torah, the Navi told David HaMelech which particular parcel of land to purchase for the Beis HaMikdash. Before that, there was what's called a Heter Bomos. So it was lavd after the Beis HaMikdash. I could have my own personal bomb in my backyard. But in any event, L'shichno Sidrashu is a pasuk that refers to after Beis HaBechira, once the Beis HaBechira has been chosen. However, the same phrase, L'shichno Sidrashu, takes on a different meaning when we talk about Achilas, Maaser Sheni, and Kodshim Kalim. Because Maaser Sheni and Kodshim Kalim do not require, you don't have to eat them in the Beis HaMikdash, but rather you can eat them anywhere in Yerushalayim. And you'll see that in the Mishnayos and Zvachim that we recite every morning for those who recite the Mishnayos and Zvachim. He says, with regard to Ibrashana, and here he's basing himself on the Yad Ramah, the concept of L'shichnu Sidrashu includes all of Eretz Yehuda. And it's very interesting that the Ran is pointing out that L'shichnu Sidrashu is like a chameleon. You know, it takes on a different meaning depending upon its context. Sometimes it means the Beis HaMikdash and that's it. Sometimes it means all of Yerushalayim. And sometimes it means all of Eretz Yehuda. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we're almost at the bottom of the page. I would say we're about 8-9 lines up from the bottom of the daf on Yud Aleph and Beis. Tana Rabbanan Eima Avres Hashana Ela B'Yom. We have halacha that mishpat, which means din, judgment, has to take place by day. And now the Bryce is extending that to include Ibrashana. The process of Ibrashana, the ruling decided by the Bezdin, has to be issued during the day. Because Ibrashana has a status of mishpat, as we'll soon see. And the Tanakhama, this Bryce, goes very far. And he claims that if Ibrua Balaila Eina Muberes, if the Bezdin were to issue a ruling at night to the effect that we're adding an extra month, that ruling is totally invalid. And we're going to have to derive that from a pasuk in Chumash. Now the same rules apply to Kiddush HaChodesh. Kiddush HaChodesh is also considered a mishpat. So for example, the Edim might want to come to Bezdin at night because that's when they saw the Levana B'chidusha, but sorry buddy, there's no Bezdin at night, and there's no decision of Bezdin B'kaddish the month at night. Ein M'kaddish L'chodesh Ela B'yom, M'kidshua B'layla Ein M'kudosh. And Rabbi Abba is going to derive this from Apostle. So Rabbi Moshe, if you'll allow me to be Mis'anig B'sanugim, I would love to wonder whether this halacha of Ein Mekadshin Sachodesh Ela Bayom applies on the 30th day of the month according to Plimo. Let's go back for a moment to Plimo. Who remembers where Plimo is? I think it's on Daf Yud. One second. One second. Sorry. Got myself a little bit disoriented. So I'm just going to... Where is it? Yud Amid Beis? Oh, excellent. Thank you so much, Mitch. So on Yudam and Beis, we have a sheet of Plimo. Again, I could ask my question even according to Rabbi Eliezer, but first we'll start with Plimo. And the Gemara says that according to Plimo, we only need Kiddush HaChodesh in the case of what's called a mole, meaning if the Eidim didn't come on the 30th day, which would mean that the Chodesh is going to be a mole, and that the 31st day is going to be the first day of the new month. In such a case, according to Plimo, we need Kiddush HaChodesh. But if the Eidim came on the 30th day, then we don't need Kiddush HaChodesh. Well, let me just read this inside. Just one second. This is Rav Nachman, am I right? Yeah, Rav Nachman Omar. So if you want to look for it, you'll find it here in the middle of Yudam and Beis. Somewhere in the middle here. Let's see, no, if I can get it. Yeah, is there a Tosus that might help us find it? Just to
15 down.
15 lines from the top of the page?
Yeah.
Okay, good. 15 lines from the top of the page. Rav Nachman Omar, Kiddush Achar Ibur Bishlosha. Biyoma Ibur Lecha Kiddush. Yoma Ibur means on the 30th day. So the Eidim came on the 30th day. They saw the new Levana. That day becomes the first day of the new month. And the previous month is a chaser of 29 days. And according to Plimo, Bizmano ain't Mekachino, so we don't need Kiddush HaChodesh Bizmano. So on the 30th day, we don't need Kiddush HaChodesh. So I was wondering, what would be, let's go back to our Gemara for a second, where the Gemara says, Kitshu Balaila ain't Mekudosh. So it means, and this can be the subject of my Iyunshi if anyone's around today at 10:30. The Minchas Chinuch, we're going to study the Iyun Gadol. The Minchas Chinuch says that even in the case of the 30th day, according to Plimo, we still need Bezdin to receive Eidim, to receive witnesses. Why? Because the Torah commands us, again, we're going to get into this at 10:30 if anyone's around, the Torah commands Bezdin to receive witnesses that saw the new moon. And that applies even according to Plimo, even on the 30th day. And what happens is that Bezdin accepts the Eidim, and that Koveh, that's going to be the Chodesh, but they don't have to be Makadish the Chodesh, according to Plimo. Why? Because that's a normal, you know, classic kind of a month, which is a Chaser, and on the 30th day you have the new moon. That's what we're expecting, we're anticipating. So I was just wondering, would it be, according to Plimo, that this process could take place at night? Now again, I'm not sure exactly how to work this out, because the Eidim can't come at night, there's no Yeshiva's Bezdin at night. But let's say the Eidim were able to come right before nightfall. Would it be possible for Bezdin to determine that tomorrow, meaning the 30th day, is Rosh Chodesh, and they could do that even at night? Why? Because if you look at our Gemara carefully, the language of the Gemara is a mekachinus hachodesh el v'yom. In other words, we need the yom for kiddush hachodesh. But according to Plimo, there's no obligation incumbent upon Bez to be mekadish the chodesh unless it's a chodesh liachar ha'ibur, it means on the 31st day. Okay, that was just for my own fun. Om Rabbi Abba, my crow, what's the pasuk that excludes Lila from Ibur Shana and Kiddush HaChodesh?
I'm sorry, isn't part of the problem if you do it at night, it's already the 30th day?
So that's good. You know, I want to be Makadish the 30th day, and it's the nighttime, so that would be good. Adarab, but then night should be excellent. You know, we already received the Eidus, and we want to be Makadish tomorrow, and the night is Hayom Holi Chachar Laila, so therefore I could be Makadish the day at night. Why can't I do so? So Rabbi Abba derives this from a pasuk. Tik'u b'chodesh shofar b'kesel yom chagenu. Very strange pasuk in Tehillim. Let's try to take it apart. On the one hand, the Torah is talking about tkiyah. Tkiyah usually refers to tkiyas shofar. And it says it explicitly. Tik'u b'chodesh shofar. Now, when do we blow the shofar? On Rosh Hashanah, but we're talking about Chodesh. And therefore Chodesh has nothing to do with a chag, you know, a holiday. But the end of the pasuk says, Liyom Chagenu. So obviously we're talking about Tkiyah Shofar on a Chag. And Tkiyah Shofar on a Chag is referring to Rosh Hashanah. So hence, what does the word B'chodesh mean? Why is the word Chodesh appropriate for one holiday out of all the list of holidays that we have? And that's Rosh Hashanah. Hello, anybody? I guess that my question is so silly that you didn't even bother answering it. Yeah, because by definition, Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Chodesh. So it makes sense that the Pasuk in Tehillim would address Rosh Hashanah as Bachodesh. Bachodesh means the beginning of the month of Tishrei, and that coincides with Rosh Hashanah by definition. But what's Bekeseh? The word Bekeseh indicates kisui, which is something that's concealed. So the drasha of Rabbi Abba goes as follows: Ezu Chag, which Chag do we speak about as Achodesh Miskasebo? Okay, Achodesh Miskasebo. Now Chodesh refers to the Levana, right? Because our Hebrew calendar is a lunar calendar, so the moon. You know, the moon on this holiday, this is the one holiday where the moon is not to be found. Why isn't the moon to be found? Because it's the first of the month. On the first of the month, the moon is pretty much, waned away. What's the word I want to use? It's concealed. Excellent. It's completely concealed. And therefore, Avi Omer Zeh Rosh Hashanah. So it's very clear now that the one single holiday which is referred to here in this pasuk under Bekeseh, meaning that the Chodesh is concealed, that can only be Rosh Hashanah, because since Rosh Hashanah is at the beginning of the month, at this point the Chodesh is concealed. Halavana miskases, okay, Miloshin Kisui, it's concealed. So far, so good. So now we have this pasuk, and the beginning of the pasuk is understood as a reference, an allusion to Tkiyas HaShofar on that Chodesh which is Kasui, which is Liyom Chagenu, is a reference to Rosh Hashanah. But let's look at the end of this pasuk. The end of the pasuk says Ki Chok LiYisrael Hu Mishpat LeElohei Yaakov. So we're now talking about the Chok of making Rosh Hashanah into a Chag. And again, to make Rosh Hashanah into the Chag, we need what's called Kiddush HaChodesh, because Rosh Hashanah coincides with the first of the new month of Tishrei. So we have to first decide, when is Rosh Hashanah? So the answer is, Rosh Hashanah is Aleph Tishrei. Well, when is Aleph Tishrei? And the answer is, that's what Beis Din is all about. That's their responsibility, to make a decision, when is Rosh Chodesh? And in determining so, they are fulfilling what's called Mishpat. You see, because it says Mishpat Lelokei Yaakov. Now the word Mishpat has a very, very specific meaning. And it's referring to Beis Din. So the Torah here in this pasuk is telling me that the Beis Din for Kiddush HaChodesh, to set up Rosh Hashanah as the first day of the new year, in this case, but the new month, is going to be called and classified as Mishpat. Says Rabbi Abba, Ma Mishpat Bayom. We know that din always requires day, is Af Kiddush HaChodesh. So too, Kiddush HaChodesh is also called Mishpat, and it's Bayom. But Rabbi said, what somehow got lost, got dropped here? Which ball got dropped here in the equation? Let's start again. Tana Rabbana, Ein Ma'abrim Es Hashanah El Bayom. And then it says, Ein Ma'kadshin Es HaChodesh El Bayom. Om Rabbi Abba, my crop. Well, this pasuk is referring to what, Rav Osai? Nobody's with me. How did I manage to lose you so fast? I don't know. Again, Ein ma'abrim es Hashanah ela bayom. Correct? Fast forward. Ein ma'kadshin es HaChodesh ela bayom. Okay? And Rabbi Abba quotes a pasuk, and this pasuk says that Ma Mishpat Bayom, Af Kiddush HaChodesh Bayom. What got lost in the shuffle here, Rabbi Osai? Ibra Hashanah. Where did Ibra Hashanah get lost? We started by establishing that Ibra Hashanah requires Yom, and we ended up with a pasuk that teaches and establishes that Kiddush HaChodesh requires Yom. What happened to Ibra Hashanah? So here we have an insight of the Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah says the following: that Ibra Hashanah and Kiddush HaChodesh are one and the same in this context. Why? Because the only way you can determine the Chodesh is if you first determine how many months there are in the year. Let me read to you his language. He says, Kfiyas Chadoshim be'ibra shana tolui. You can't be koveh the Chodesh unless you have the Ibra shana determined. Like sha'ab me'abrim beis hashana is nidchim kol ha'chadoshim imkoman. Once we add an extra month, all the Rosh Chodeshim now get removed. You know, it's like a dentist who removes a tooth, you know. And if you remove one tooth, then all the other teeth start moving. He says, of course,
so but is Ibra
Hashana
determined by Tishrei, I thought we said it by Adar.
Right, but in order to know exactly when we could be Mekadosh the Chodesh, we're going to have to figure out whether the year is Me'uba. So, for example, let's say the Bezin was Ma'ar the Chodesh on one year. That's going to have an impact on when Rosh Hashanah is going to fall out of the next year. Because what happens is when you shake everything up and you add a month, it's going to push all the Rosh Chodeshim ahead of each other. So again, you know, in the discussion that we had yesterday, we're going to have to figure out how to reconcile exactly when Rosh Chodesh is, and that's going to be dependent on Ibra Shana. Tana Rabbanan, now we're about to turn to Daf Yud Beis. Ein ma'arim es hashana b'shnei re'avon. Re'avon means that the crops are very meager, the rains are very limited, and the food is hard to come by. And what happens is here is that on an accelerated rate, we consume all the food, because there's very little food in this famine year, of last year. Now, if they add another 30 days, then what they're doing is they are delaying the Omer, which means they're extending the Isur Chadash for an extra month. So imagine, we have such limited amount of food on the market in this very difficult particular year, and now you're telling me that you know, the whatever meager amount of food we were able to harvest from this year's crop, well, it became awesome now for another month. You've extended the Isur Chadash for a full month. Again, if I would dramatize, I'd say people are starving in the streets. So what are you going to do? You're going to add a month? So that's the way Rashi learns this sugya. But Rabbeinu Chananel has a different interpretation, and he says the following, that this has to do with the law of supply and demand, meaning the price for the tefuah. And what we're afraid of is that last year's tefuah will soar up in price. Why? Because the people start making a cheshbon about how much tefuah they'll need for the months to come. And they're going to start hoarding whatever food that they have. So he writes the following. Ha'anoshim izbonanim kamazman nishar atzmano isu shal tefuah v'achadosh ligronos. They're calculating how long will it be from today until the point at which they can gather in the new tefuah, the new crop, into the silos. The LP zek kovim es bechira tefuah. Why? Because the price, the market price of tefuah is going to reflect the fact that people are in need of buying tefuah. The im tisaber hashana yisvasef od chodesh ad lizman agronos. If we're going to have to wait another month until we can consume our produce, then the limited amount of produce that we have that's not chadash is going to go up in value. It's going to soar up to shamayim. So in order to make sure that we guarantee that the price of tefuah will reflect its real price, again, in a shnas ravon, it's impossible to be the real price, but at least relative, we want to put a cap, so to speak, and limit the amount of inflation in the price of tefuah, then we have to avoid Ibur Hashanah. The Adramah goes even a step further. He's afraid that if we're going to be Ma'abra the Shana, people are going to violate the Isur Chadash. They're going to be so desperate to eat the crop, the meager amount of volume of crop, they're going to eat it even before the Omer. And so we have to protect the people of Israel from violating the Isur Chadash, and therefore we're not going to, the last thing in the world we want to do is add an extra month to the Heter Chadash of the Omer. Tanya, we learned in the Brisa, Rebbe Omer. Now this Braisa is going to prove what we established before, that in a Shnas Re'avon, Ravon, we're not going to have Ibur Shon. And this is based on a parsha in Tanakh. Okay, so if we didn't make it to the Gush, at least we gave it to learn a little Tanakh today. Okay, so this is Melachim Beis Perek Dal, and it says the following. This is a story about Elisha. Elisha, as you know, was a very beloved Navi, but not only that, he was the Av Bezdin. He was an individual who combined both roles. You know, he wore two hats. And he had a tremendous amount of influence on his Talmidim and their Talmidim. You know, they all considered Elisha to be the top man. And what they wanted to do, people from all over the land wanted to bring gifts to Elisha, food. In this case, it's kikros lechem, as we'll see in the pasuk, that's made of seorim. It's barley bread. Now, how many people in this room eat barley bread? Nobody, right? Who eats barley bread? But if it's a famine year, you'll pay any amount of money for barley bread.
Or if you have celiac.
Yeah, isn't that oats?
No.
As far as I know, there is something called gluten-free oats. I'm not sure if there's gluten-free barley. Maybe such a thing exists. I don't know. I don't know where it is.
It's oats.
Yeah, barley is high in gluten. Anyway, so what they're going to bring is 20 loaves of barley bread as a gift to the Navi. And he's meant to share this with his students, you know, who are learning, their apprentices, learning how to be Nevi'im. This is the school of prophecy, right? The prophets-to-be school, right? You have to get a PhD in order to graduate and be a prophet. In any event, we're going to study this parsha, and in order to determine whether or not there would have been a possibility of Ibur Shana. Okay, so what happens? The Ish Ba Mi Baal Shalisha, so there's an area in Eretz Yisrael called Baal Shalisha, and a man came, he represented a whole group of people, and it was a famine year. Vayavela Ish Elokim, this is a reference to Elisha, Lechem Bikurim, Esrim Lechem Siorim. Okay? The Eilecha Kala Bechol Eretz Yisrael Levashel Perosea Yoser Min Baal Shalisha. The reason why the Tanakh emphasizes that the area from which these breads were coming was Baal Shalisha is because that was the most fertile area in all of the land. And the fruits would mature at a very, very fast pace. The Afal Pichen Lo Bichrel Min Echad. And nevertheless, they could only come up with one species, one grain, in order to make the bread. What was that grain? Barley. It was siorim. Shema tomar chitim. And if you'll tell me, maybe it was chitim. And chitim is usually the last of the five grains to ripen in the field. Again, we'd have to ask the botanists what do they call it? Agronomy? What's it called? Whatever the word is. We'd have to ask them to substantiate this. But the Gemara's assumption in science here is that the chitim are the last. So maybe it means that there were plenty of ripened grain at that point. Tamalom siorin, because if they had the option of bringing lechem chita for the sake of the Navi and his Talmidim, then certainly that's what they would have done. If they would have availed themselves of the most ideal possibility. You don't bring it's almost an insult if you bring barley bread when you could have brought wheat bread. The answer is, Talmud Lomer, it says siorim in the pasuk, so it means that there were no other possibilities here. There were no grains to be available. And the only one that they were able to get a hold of was barley. Talmud, right. Vishema Tomar, maybe you'll say that at that period of time, Lifnei HaOmer Haya. In other words, maybe this was very early in the season, and therefore there was a very limited amount of Tvua, because the calendar date. Talmud Lomar, but the pasuk says Tein La'am V'Yochelu. Yoshua says to his second in command, He says that he should give the Sa'orim to his Talmidim that were there, and he would only give it to them if it was after the Omer. So we must be talking about a calendar date that's post the 16th of Nisan. So we're talking about Achar HaOmer. So if it's Achar HaOmer, therefore the Chodesh becomes Yoshan, and you're allowed to eat it. And that's why he's going to divvy up these breads amongst his Talmidim. And yet, it's already at that late moment in the calendar. So we're talking in the second half of Nisan, and all they could dig up was Seorim. What happened to the at that stage and at that late date in the calendar year? Why couldn't they bring Chitim? And Mar Meata, the answer must be that Reuya Hoisa Osa Shana Shetis Aber, since most of the Tvua was not ripened. Again, we have to determine which part of Eretz Yisrael we're referring to. But in any event, let's assume that all of Eretz Yisrael in that year, the grains had not yet ripened. So that's valid justification for Ibra Shana. Umipnei Malo Ibra Elisha. Okay, so here we have to ask the question: how the Gemara knows that Elisha was not Ma'abra the Shana? Here we're talking about Elisha wearing another hat. He's the Av Bezdin, he's the Nasi of the Bezdin, and he refuses to be Ma'abra the Shana. And the answer is because Shnas Batsores Haisa, because it was a very lean year, a drought year, and it was very limited amount of food to be had. V'hayu akol rotzin lebeis hagranos, and people were running, you know, to get a hold of the, you know, whatever tefuah that they can get a hold of, and therefore he, Elisha, decided this, it would not be a good idea to postpone the bringing of the Omer by adding another month, because then the Yisr Chadash would extend for another month, and people were desperate to get food for the new crop, and they wouldn't be able to eat it for another month because it would be Chadash. So this Bryce of Rebbe, interpreting the parasha of Elisha and the Ish Baal Shalisha, is the source for what we saw in the Braisa that Abram is Hashanah B'Shnei Ra'avon. So now let's focus on two points. Okay. Point number one. The Pasuk says, Tein La'am V'yochelu. And the Gemara uses that as a proof that it was after Akrovas HaOmer. How could that be a proof? Isn't it possible that this was way before the Omer, and maybe it was a pikuach nefesh situation where Elisha was matir the Isra Achilas Chadosh because of pikuach nefesh? You know, with all due respect to the Isra Chadosh, it's a serious Isra, but it is definitely trumped by pikuach nefesh v'chaybahem. So that's question number one. Now it could be that since Elisha made this claim of Tein La'am V'yochelu, that's how he formulated it, it would seem that he was allowing them to eat as much as they wanted. And that's called Kidei Sviya. Kidei Sviya means fill up your bellies. If it was before the Omer, then although Pikuach Nefesh is Matir the Yisur Chadosh, but nevertheless, it's only up to the point of Sakana and not beyond. So why did he allow them in a very magnanimous way, you know, take all the food, fill up your bellies, and you should not be inhibited at all about how much of a volume you want to eat. You can satiate yourself. Now, Rabbi Osei, this has nothing to do with the famous Reb Chaim. You know, Reb Chaim Brisker was wont to say that once there's a het to pikuach nefesh, for example, you have a chol on Yom HaKippurim, then you eat as much as you would eat. You know, he called it Kisudas Shlomo Melech B'Shaito. You know, Shlomo Melech was a very rich king, so they had, you know, like King Henry VIII, you know, they had these banquets. So eat as much as you want. This has nothing to do with Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim would say eat as much as you want when the Mechayev is not the Chefzad Isur, but Yom HaKippurim. So if you're a Chole, then you're not included in the mitzvah of Inisem, and hence you can eat as much as you want. Masha Enkein, in the case of a Chefzad Yisur like Chadosh, every single bite, every single kezias that you eat is a separate violation of Chadosh. So that at every moment that you're eating a morsel of chadash, you have to ask yourself, well, is that necessary for your health to save your life?
It's an iser chefza, you're
saying, right. It's an iser chefza, which means that every maisa has to be judged unto itself. Mashen ken in Yom HaKippur, and the question is, are you included in the mitzvah of inisev, or you're excluded? Now, that assumption, okay, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but that assumption that a chol is excluded from Yom Kippur is really a machlokes haposkim as far as Kiddush is concerned, whether or not a chol recites Kiddush on Yom Kippur. And there are those poskim, which among Avram quotes, that you don't, that a chol does not recite Kiddush on Yom Kippur, because he doesn't have the Kiddush of Yom Kippur. Those who allow the, and require of the chol to make Kiddush, that's because of a different reason. That's because the Kedusha of Yom HaKippur is a twofold Kedusha. It has the Kedusha of Iser Inui, and it also has the Kedusha of Iser Malacha. And as far as a chol is concerned, he's included under the Kedusha of Iser Malacha. Whether that's enough to justify Kiddush, that's going to be an issue. Right, I don't want to get into that, but I'm just mentioning, for those who want to discuss that after the Shia, that's a fascinating topic. Now there's a Tosis Divrei Maaseh Re'uyah on the top of Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. And he wants to know, how does the Gemara know that Re'uya Hoysa Osa Shana Lis'aber? Right? We saw that there's a reason of Ibur, one of the cause, the justifications for Ibur was Aviv, that the Aviv was delayed. Now, we only know that the Aviv was delayed in Baal Shlisha. Tosa says that Baal Shlisha, I don't know if they know today where that is. You know, you have to ask the what do they call them? The archaeologists. Maybe the archaeologists dug up Baal Shlisha. I don't know. But in any event, Tosa assumes that it's in Eretz Yehuda.
Yeah.
So Tosa assumes that Baal Shlisha is in Eretz Yehuda. So therefore, it could be very possible that the grains had ripened both in Goliel and in Evra Yarden. And if that be the case, then we don't have a justification for Ibur Shana, because we learned yesterday, that Ein Ma'avram HaShana Elo K'shlo Gia. Oh, we learned it today, actually, K'shlo Gia Oviv B'shtei Arotzos. Right? We need Shtei Arotzos. So all we know is that in Yehuda there was Lo Igia Aviv, but we don't know about the other two Arotzos. It's quite possible that the other two Arotzos, they did have Aviv, they did achieve Aviv. Tosis is not happy with one Kasha, he feels he has to ask another Kasha. And he says that even if there was an Ichur in Bishol Atfua, which is called Aviv, that's only one reason. We've established, and this we discussed yesterday, that we need another reason. And that has to do with Peros HaElon. Remember, because on Shavuos they had to bring the Bikurim from the Peros HaElon, or maybe the Tkufa. But we don't know that there was a second reason besides Aviv that would justify Ibur HaShana. So how does the Brisa of Rebbe state that Re'uya Ha'isa Osa Shana L'Sabra Minayin? How do we know such a thing? So Tosis answers that forget about Baal Shalisha in terms of its geographic location, which in fact is in Yehuda, but let's talk about Baal Shalisha in terms of the quality of the land, the capacity or the fertility of the land. He says it's very fertile land. And the premise is that if there was no Bishal Atvua in such a land, which is so fertile, and usually the first grains anywhere in Eretz Yisrael will crop up in Baal Shalisha, then we should derive from this that Lo Yigia Aviv Gam B'Shar Chelkei Haaretz. So Tosa is introducing a new variable into the equation. We've been discussing three Arotzos as three separate independent entities, and it could very well be that in one land one of these three areas of Eretz Yisrael, there is Bishul, there is Aviv, Bishul Atvua, and the other there isn't, so forth and so on. But now Tosis says that you can find a Simon Ledavar in one of these three lands that will tell you, without even having to investigate, that Lo Yigia Aviv even Bishar Chelke Eretz Yisrael. And that's called Baal Shalisha. That's called Baal Shalisha, because if there's no Aviv in Baal Shalisha, then you can assume that there's no Aviv in the other Chelke Eretz Yisrael, because Baal Shalisha was always the first to, you know, for the Tefillah to pop up from the ground. Okay, but we only have now one Siman. And Tosis adds, Kach Yesh Lilmod Mikach Shegam Peres Ha'ilun Lo Yisbashu Ad Atzeres. He says that if there weren't enough rains and the conditions were not perfect for Bishul Atvua in a place like Baal Shalisha, then how much more so as far as the Peres HaElon is concerned, because the Peres HaElon require that much more rain and so forth and so on, they wouldn't ripen before Atzer. So we have two out of the three reasons. But the real question that I want to ask you, and this is Tosis Divrei Masel Umipnei, and this is a killer of a question. How does the Gemara know that Elisha, in fact, was not Ma'abra the Shana? We just finished saying that there were two out of the three reasons to justify Ibur HaShana. We don't know about Tkufa, but we know about Tfu and Peres HaElon. Maybe, in fact, Elisha was Ma'abra the Shana.
And mastered the Chadash anyway.
Or maybe he was Mata the Chadash, correct? Because, What did we say before? We said that if it's a pikuach nefesh situation, then he... Yeah, but no. You can't say he was matir the chadash, because he says, what was the pasuk? Attain la'am v'yocheilu. You know, just stuff yourself, if you pardon that. That's not a nice phrase, but, you know, eat as much as your heart desires. So it can't be that he was matir chadash. He would never have said such a thing if he was matir chadash. So Tosis answers the following. He says, how do we know that Elisha was not Ma'abra the Shana? He says that Im Hoya Ma'abra, if he was in fact Ma'abra the Shana, Lo Yitochein Shalo Ayu Motzim Kama Minim Shenisbashu Acher Zman HaKrovas HaOmer. The Gemara says that that the reason why he was not Ma'abra the Shana is because if he would have been Ma'abra the Shana, just one second, let me just get this straight. If he would have been Ma'abra the Shana, in other words, we need to find the other meaning, correct? We need to find the other meaning. Right? We found Sa'ora, and we want to find Chita by the time of Hakrova Sa'omer. So what are we going to do if we're going to be Ma'abra the Shana? Then for sure we'll find the other meaning. And apparently Elisha was worried that since it was a Shnas Ravon or Batzoris, therefore they wouldn't be able to be Makriv the Omer, because they wouldn't be able to find the Omer, and therefore he must have hesitated from adding another month, because if he... So now the cash is, maybe he did add another month because of the Aviv and Peres HaElon, but the answer is, had he in fact been Ma'abra the Shana, then by then there would be Chitin, so then we definitely would bring the Aviv. Right, so why is he worried about the fact that the, you know, the best thing he can do here is Sa'ora? If he would have been Ma'abra the Shana, it would have been a possibility of Chita as well.
Matar in the Chadash, also Pikuach Nefesh. Why, if he says Futra, so wouldn't that allow
I don't think so, because again, Hutra only applies when there is Pikuach Nefesh. But here, if they would have eaten a certain limited volume, there would no longer be Pikuach Nefesh.
Between Hutra and
Hutra would apply in a case where there is a heter, and then we would say, well, as long as there's a heter, you don't have to do it in an unusual way, you could do it in the normal way. But again, every single achila would have to be decided by itself. So once we set up an achila, so Dechuya would say, you know what, if you can eat it, pachas pachas mikashir, or if you can eat shalok kedarka, that's called Dechuya. Hutcha would say, right now you're in a situation of pikuach nefesh, eat it normally, eat a full shear, don't take a break in the middle. Now, once you've passed the point of pikuach nefesh, now your body has enough sustenance, then even Hutcha wouldn't help you because there's no pikuach nefesh, so you can't start a brand new achila. So we could use Hutcha to determine the tzuras achila. For example, in Shabbos, you know, machal Shabbos for a chol. So there are two ways of doing the malacha. You can do the malacha with your left hand, you can do it the normal way through your right hand. So if you hold dechuya, do it with your left hand because you want to minimize the damage in the iser. But if you hold hutra, go ahead and do it with your right hand. But that's only as long as it's pikuach nefesh. So you've done what you've done. You've solved the problem of pikuach nefesh. From now on, there's no pikuach nefesh. So you can't initiate a new process of violating Shabbos or violating an iser achilas chadash when there's no pikuach nefesh. Just quickly to go back to the Tosas Dirumaskal Umipnei Malo Ivra Elisha, and we want to know how did the Gemara know for sure that Elisha in fact did not implement an Ibra Shana. So Tosas says V'yimtomar minolan delo Iber. How do we know in fact that Elisha for sure was not Ma'abar the Shana? Maybe he was Ma'abar the Shana, and in a Shnas Ra'av, even though it was a shasra of lo haya lahem lechel el siorim elu, you know, they only had the siorim to eat. Yesh lomer, Tosfos says the isa the ibra, if he in fact was ma'abar the shana and they were bringing the omer chodesh echad miuchar, in other words they would bring the omer a month later down, then he efsha shelo hayu motziim kama minim Shekvar nisbashlu levad misiorim elu betkufazu sheachrei haomer. And what that means is that if we're going to say that the previous year, the Shana Kodemis, was Muberes, then they would certainly have found other minim that had matured other than siorim. He says, Ula Maksha, the Efshesh lo Iber Elisha, Mishum Shalisa Shana Zushna Shana Shvias. Maybe the reason why there was no Iber is because it was Shemitah. We'll see later on that there's no Iber Shana on Shemitah. So that's the Aruch Laner's Kash. Okay, then we'll stop here. Emir Tzashem, Bli Neder. Tomorrow we'll start with Tana Rabbanon, Ein Mi Avernus Hashana Lifnei Rosh Hashanah.